Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? The great thing about podcasts is that you don't have to be a professional to do it. Anybody can publish anything. But there are a lot of questions to ask when you first get started. I know I had a bunch. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other big places people like to listen? And how do I make money off my podcast? Because it truly is a labor of love. To answer every one of these questions, it's really simple, actually. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. Even I can use it. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors too, so you can get paid to podcast. I love Anchor because it's simple to use. I can record an episode or just a thought on my phone and upload it right then and there. They provide background music and also some sounds to really make your podcast pop. So if you've ever wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. To join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor, that's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast. Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. Have you ever thought of compassion as a finite resource? Haven't we always been told that there's enough love, caring, and compassion to hand out to everyone we interact with? In reality, that may not be the case at all. Today, I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by Dr. Kimberly Miller. Dr. Miller has spent countless hours working with first responders and has her finger on the pulse of those of us who are suffering from burnout. You guys, she gets us. Today, she's going to explain what compassion fatigue is and what we can do to keep the superhero super. Thank you so much, Dr. Miller, for joining us. I really appreciate you being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be on with y'all today.
So give us a little bit of a background about yourself and why you wanted to study psychology in the first place.
Yeah, I am originally from Alabama. I grew up in Birmingham, went to Auburn University for my undergrad, and then later on I'll tell you about how I got to grad school. But I actually was sort of weird in the fact that when I was 17 years old, that is super young, I figured out that I wanted to be a psychologist. And it happened the summer before my senior year, when I happened to be reading a magazine. It had just come out, called Psychology Today. And I was reading all this stuff about what psychologists do and these other articles. And I was like, well, this like sort of sounds like me. It sort of felt like my calling. I was always able to really make good connections with people and build relationships. I was always the quote unquote safe person at school that people always felt like they could come and tell me their problems and they wanted advice and stuff like that. And of course, I enjoyed helping people and feeling like I was making a difference, that I had an impact. And so I actually figured out when I was 17 that I wanted to be a psychologist. And sort of my other piece of that was realizing that my purpose in life was to leave a person, place, or thing better than I found it. And I figured that psychology could enable me to meet that passion or meet that goal of mine, that calling. So after I graduated from Auburn, I ended up working for like 10 years. That was not the original plan, but life got a bit derailed and then went back to grad school. So I did my master's degree at Ball State in Indiana. And then currently I live in Colorado. And what brought me out here was doing my PhD at Colorado State University. So all my degrees are in psychology. And people always ask me, how did I end up sort of working with first responders, people in public safety, sworn and civilian? And it really sort of just happened. It was not something I had intended to do. But in my master's program, for my thesis project, I created and validated a new strength-based measure of psychological well-being. And I was really interested in the wellness aspect of employees, really in any organization, but I ended up approaching my sheriff and saying, hey, I'm interested in looking at your employees and looking at their wellness and their mental health and how they're using their strengths at work, and asked him if he wanted to participate. And I would then, you know, give him free consulting if he wanted to participate. And he was like, oh, this is the best thing I've ever heard. And so it sort of went from there. He participated. He got a bunch of other law enforcement agencies to participate. And people, I think, found a lot of value in the work. They cared about their employees. They wanted to dive deeper into employee wellness and well-being and what can they do to change things at work. And then that project grew into my dissertation when I continued that same work. And then when I was on internship in Oregon for a year, I actually had some of my law enforcement clients calling me and asking me, hey, can you come and work with us? Can you come help us? Can you come teach classes? Can you consult? And so I was like, sure. And so I was very blessed to have that grow into a full-time career where I do three main things. One is I teach. I have 35 classes that I teach around the country. And those range from leadership to conflict and communication, creating safety at work, building trust, change management, customer service and PSAPs, compassion, fatigue, and wellness, what we're talking about today, implicit bias, ethics, et cetera. I also do consulting. So I help organizations improve their hiring process, promotions, evaluation process. I help organizations with strategic planning, succession planning, change management, executive retreats, team building. And then I also offer coaching. This could be individual coaching or group coaching. And obviously the coaching is tailored to whatever the individual or group's needs are. So that's a very, very long answer. And I apologize for going on and on, but that's a little bit about my journey and then how I got to this place and all the services I provide.
Not long at all. I think it's absolutely fascinating, the journey that you've been on and how you've got to be where you are today. And I actually got to meet you at APCO, which is a convention conference for people who are in 911 dispatch, telecommunicators. And it's funny that you say that you were the safe person in school. You're the one that people could always come to, because I saw just a very short, brief presentation by you. And definitely felt at ease and definitely felt like you were very knowledgeable subject matter expert. So I feel that is pretty accurate classification of who you are.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You are very welcome. Let's talk a little bit about the subject matter at hand, which is called compassion fatigue. And I started hearing this term kind of being thrown around in the past couple of years, but it's really been brought to light among first responders, people in the helping profession. Can you talk to us a little bit about it?
This is trauma of the caretakers. So this is stress. This is emotional residue. This is, you can think about it almost like a big wet blanket that lays on you. And as you experience more of other people's trauma, that blanket gets wetter, gets colder, and gets heavier. And this is not your trauma. This is the residue and the strain and the stress of being immersed in other people's trauma and stress. When you think about first responders, other than the occasional silly call into 911 that's not an emergency, or, you know, a cat stuck in a tree, or, you know, you're lost and you need to talk to a police officer for help, most calls into 911 centers and most public safety contacts are people experiencing some level of stress, of trauma, of pain. And though you're there, you're present for that as a first responder, it's not your pain, but you're affected by it. And that's what compassion fatigue is. And you can get compassion fatigue from one critical incident, right? It can be so traumatic. It makes me think of these massive shootings that we have around the country. And the one that pops in my mind so saliently, because I attended a presentation on it, was the Las Vegas shooting. And I think about those dispatchers, those firefighters, those police officers, all were experiencing some level of stress. Now, granted, some were on the scene where shots were being fired, but after the bullet stopped, there's still trauma and there's still stress. So one event can take you all the way down to compassion fatigue. But for a lot of people, it's a cumulative process. It's not the first stressful 911 call that gets to people, that they start showing symptoms. It's after doing it for years and years and decades that heavy, wet blanket sometimes gets more than what people can manage.
Yeah, one of my coworkers kind of explained it in a certain way where it's not the school shooting call. It's not the rollover with extrication and fatalities call that can get to her, because she has tools to cope with that. We've been taught pretty well what we need to do in those situations. But it's after dealing with that call and that's over with. And it's the gentleman calling 911 incessantly about a dog barking or a car parked in an alleyway, which is not really a huge issue. That's where she sees her signs of stress come out, where she has the lack of compassion and she gets angry at the person who's asking for help. Does that make sense?
Yeah, in some ways, I wouldn't say that in the way she's describing that I would say that that's compassion fatigue. I think that is a symptom of doing the work where these other people who call for these trivial reasons don't understand the life and death that y'all have to deal with as telecommunicators. And so that people that call with a silly question or something that is not perceived to be an emergency can become very irritating to people. And in that instance, I might describe that for those telecommunicators in those moments, as you said, it's a lack of compassion. It's not the same thing as compassion fatigue. It's like, I don't have time for these crazy callers because somebody's life is on the line and I don't need to be bothered with this trivial stuff, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us an example or maybe talk about some of the signs and symptoms of compassion fatigue?
Yeah. So when you're in compassion fatigue, and there are many symptoms of this, but I'm going to go over just a few for time's sake. One thing that you'll hear people say, well, why do I come to work anymore? Nothing really matters. You know, I do my best to try to fix the world, to help the world, but I come back the next day and it's more messed up. Like I can't ever catch a break. It's always a mess. I don't make an impact. So on some level, they're talking about the work doesn't have the same calling to them. It doesn't bring them meaning. They don't feel fulfilled in it. And you think about most people who go into public safety, they have a passion for it. I mean, because y'all work so hard, you're doing shift work, you're dealing with crazy people, you're dealing with stressful situations. If you don't have a calling, you can't survive it. So when people start talking about it doesn't matter anymore and there's no meaning, that's a huge sign. Another sign is more associated with people experiencing PTSD. But it absolutely can also be a sign of compassion fatigue. This is when people get reoccurring nightmares or flashbacks to traumatic events. Now, let's use telecommunicators as an example. It doesn't have to be that you were on scene, right, at the event. You could just be hearing the noise, the screams, all of that, and you could have nightmares waking up to taking that traumatic call. That's also a sign of compassion fatigue. Now, probably another one that is less noticed or less attended to is chronic physical ailments such as gastrointestinal problems, recurrent colds, chronic headaches. And I'm not talking about somebody that when they started the career, they had stomach issues or they were sick all the time. I'm talking about when people start in the profession, they're pretty healthy, they take care of themselves, but then over time, like they have a cold they can't get rid of, or they always have this horrible acid reflux, they can't get rid of it. They have chronic headaches that they never used to have. That's not always 100% of the time compassion fatigue, But when you think about trauma and stress and working in public safety, where a lot of people don't feel safe enough to talk about their feelings and what they're experiencing, a lot of us internalize that stress, that trauma. But your body never lies. It always ends up telling the truth. So if you're seeing some of your coworkers or people you supervise have these chronic physical ailments, of course, suggest that they go to their medical doctor, but also maybe have a conversation with them about their mental health and stress, because that can be an expression, a physical expression of compassion fatigue.
Yeah, it seems like it's a vicious cycle once you are experienced in that profession, because you're feeling the physical aspects of it, the stomach issues. I know headache and gastrointestinal issues are pretty big. And so then we have people who call out sick, which means that other people have to come in and work overtime or get held over. So then they experience stress. And then it just seems like it's a revolving door, vicious cycle throughout the organization.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a problem. It's like you can't get a hold of it, because some people are calling off because they really don't feel good and they really are sick. And then the other people are ready for a day off. They need a day off. They need time off. And then they can't because somebody else is already out. And then that creates more stress for them. And yeah, it's hard to get ahead of that.
Are there any other causes of compassion fatigue that we haven't touched upon that you'd like to go over?
No, I think, you know, it's really this idea of that is, you can call it burnout, stressed out, you know, having your bucket empty is another way I like to describe it, because you've been exposed to other people's trauma, to other people's stress, and it just sort of wears on you over time. And then you get in this, I call it being crispy around the edges, you sort of get in this crispy place. And then I think that contributes to what you talked about earlier of just not caring. You don't care about the callers. You don't care about your coworkers. You don't care about your dog. You don't care about your partner. I mean, people can be really crispy at work, but we also have to remember that those crispy people go home and have family and friends. And so their interpersonal consequences in people's personal life, when they have compassion fatigue and they're burnt out, it's not like just because they leave work, it's magically better for a day or two. They still have to take all that stuff home with them. And then their consequences of them being disengaged at home. And so it unless you do intentional self-care, it's hard to get ahead of that level of stress.
And I think in at least the telecommunicator profession, I'm not sure, I would guess it would probably be with police and fire too, is it's kind of a badge of honor in a very sick and twisted way. When you get to that point where you have compassion fatigue and you don't care about anybody and you're crispy around the edges and I'm throwing a Snickers bar at you telling you need to knock it off, it's kind of a badge of honor because you've been there for so long and you've experienced so many different things that, you know, you have a right and an entitlement to be at this point, like a milestone in the career.
Yeah. So I will ask you, as a member of this profession, why is that so? Why is that like consistently the experience as I travel the country and talk to telecommunicators and I also talk to police, and it's the same badge of honor thing. Like what's up with that?
I'm glad that it's just not me that experienced that it really is a thing.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay.
Why do you think that is in your profession?
That is a really good question. And I've been trying to do some soul searching recently to figure it out, because we have some new people who are coming on board and they are young and bright-eyed and so excited to help people and they're going to save the world. And I don't want to burst their bubble. I want them to come to work every single day with that same amount of enthusiasm and excitement because they can make a difference. But I also want to teach them what to expect when these things like start piling up, these little micro traumas or this interaction with a coworker, so that they don't get to that point of expecting that this is going to happen. I want them to be prepared that it could, but to stave it off and have those tools, which we're, I don't think that we are equipped with those tools yet as a collective society of first responders, because, you know, so-and-so good old boy Danny was in the police force for 30 years. And, you know, if I get to be where he's at, then that means that I've made it, but nobody likes me. And I have poor citizen interactions and my wife hates me. My kids hate me. You know, there's nothing to be gained by that.
Right.
But I'm not really sure why it's desirable.
Yeah.
But if I figure it out, I'll let you know.
Yeah. It's, you know, and in my conversations with people, I don't have an answer certainly, but I think part of the dynamic is the, I don't know a great way to say it, but the suck it up buttercup culture.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we are first responders. We have difficult stuff to do. The bad stuff's going to happen. Suck it up, move on to the next call. It doesn't matter what you feel about it. It doesn't matter what you think about it. You have to be professional, turn off your emotions, you know, fill in the blank, whatever. And then I think the other part is what you just said. We don't teach people how to cope. We don't teach people stress management or necessarily encourage things like peer support team or creating a quiet room or, you know, bringing in a therapy dog or massage therapist or whatever else, because that's like soft and not first respondery. That's not even a word, but you know, it's not the tough way to be, I guess.
And I'm glad you brought up peer support. Do you think that if we had more good established peer support within different agencies for all first responders and, you know, maybe nursing and clinicians too, it would be a little bit easier for us to get those tools in our toolbox?
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's, you know, with any of these tools, but especially peer support, I mean, that's a cultural hurdle that you have to overcome, right? To get people, A, to want to be peer supporters. And two, you can have a great peer support team, but if nobody calls them, then they're not really able to do their job. So I think that's a huge thing, though, because even though I have a reputation, I guess, and like when you meet me, I think people do believe that I'm approachable, like you said earlier, but I'm still a quote unquote psychologist. Most people don't want to talk to me, right? I mean, I can be as friendly and welcoming as I want to be, but there's still a lot of stigma, I think, attached in first responder world to seeking out help. But beyond that, I think in our whole society, you know, it's not popular to go seek help and talk to a therapist. So if we could create the peer support teams and have people trust in them and get them well trained, that's a huge way to open up that door and have a safe person to talk to that's not a therapist. I think that's a great way to manage stress, to deal with burnout, to deal with compassion fatigue. And that's just a peer resource. It doesn't cost anything, right, to talk to them. So I think that's one tool. Not all organizations have the level of safety required to institute that, right? Because if you are in a comm center where nobody trusts anybody, peer support's not going to work until you work on the trust. But I absolutely believe peer support is a huge tool to impart information and do a little coaching and generally be that safe space where people can vent and dump their stuff and get back into living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just took a peer support class last week, so that's why it was fresh in my mind.
Oh, super.
So you had mentioned something about a bucket earlier. And when I heard you speak at APCO, you had this brilliant analogy about a bucket. Do you mind telling us about it?
Sure. So imagine that you have one of those industrial-sized trash cans that's, let's say, holds 100 gallons of water. That is the metaphor for where you are with your self-care. And what I equate the water to is your energy level. Now, it's not realistic for any human, I think especially first responders, to imagine that you will always come to work every day with a 100-gallon bucket of water. But it is your responsibility to manage your bucket. to be intentional about where you're putting your water, meaning your energy. How are you using your energy throughout the day? And what can you do to better conserve and refill your energy bucket? What's interesting about telecommunicators especially, but I know a lot of other people in other professions can relate to this, because you have to do more with less, because there's sometimes mandatory overtime in centers. I mean, you'd be lucky if you come to work and you have a shot glass full of water. I mean, maybe you have a coffee mug full of water. But if you think about to be full, to have all your energy, to be 100% good at self-care, that's 100 gallons. Well, if you come in with an 8-ounce bottle of water or a shot glass of water, which is where a lot of people start their day at work, you don't have anywhere to go with that. That's not going to last very long. And it's also not going to take a lot to totally steal all that water. And here's an example. You come in at your console, you sit down, you're at a shot glass. The bully walks by, makes one comment, and then you're done. You fly off the handle, you start yelling at the person, y'all get in a fight. You know, the supervisor has to come and put you on separate sides of the room, and then you take your first call. Your mindset and your heart is not going to be in a good place to provide customer service to that person. And then the rest of the day, as you're trying to do your job, now on no water, you are more likely to make mistakes, to not be thorough, to be irritable, to manifest physical symptoms of stomach issues, headaches, neck tension, etc., because you have nothing left. And then people are more likely to aggravate you on your drive home. Your family and friends are more likely to aggravate you when you get home. And then as the irritation and the maybe anger or frustration of the day keeps building, now you're in the negative with your energy level. You might end the day, you know, minus 100 gallons because all you've thought about, all you've felt all day long is anger and frustration and irritation. So the work of this is learning how to manage your energy bucket. And there's three main ways to think about this. The three main places that we put our energy throughout the day is work, family, friends, and community, whatever that is to you, and yourself. Now, as first responders, because you have a calling to the work and you're passionate about the work, you always put yourself last, which means self-care is rarely a priority and you're never intentionally putting water back in your bucket. Also, because people are so passionate about the work, if they have a 20-gallon day when they go to work, they leave all 20 gallons at the office and then don't come back and intentionally have water left for family, for friends, for neighbors, for their community, and certainly nothing for themselves. So part of the work, and this is a very complex topic that would take a lot longer than we have to fully explain, but I would encourage y'all, if this analogy is speaking to you, when you get up in the morning, write down on a piece of paper, out of 100 gallons, where am I today? How many gallons do I have? And then ask yourself, okay, let's say today is a 30-gallon day. Which isn't horrible, right? It's way more than a shot glass. So on a 30-gallon day, how much do you give to work? Maybe you give 15. And some of you are gasping now going, oh my gosh, 15. How can I just give 15 at work? But 15 at work means intentional energy where it needs to be, which some of that, let's say 7 gallons of that, is going to be on the console with your callers, dispatching what you need to dispatch. Let's say maybe 8 gallons. And then the other gallons are going to be interactions with your coworkers. But when you think about it, most people burn way more than that, because as they're sitting in their at their console dispatching, they're not just focused on what they're supposed to be doing. They're thinking about the bully. They're thinking about what happened 20 minutes ago on a different call. They're thinking about their supervisor who they can't stand, who just walked by and looked at them. They're thinking about the dog that pooped on the carpet this morning. They're thinking about the fight they had with their husband or wife. We are not good as humans in general with focusing our attention, being fully present in the moment of what we're doing right now. So we fraction our energy. And yes, we're dispatching and we're focused on the console and we're typing stuff in and talking on the radio, but then we're burning all this other mental energy about things we can't control. So if we can learn to be more mindful, to be more focused, we will end up burning less energy. And you can be a great dispatcher, believe it or not, on 15 gallons of energy. But that means you're not into everybody's gossip. You're not backstabbing people at work. You're not comparing how much better you are than everyone else. You're not writing notes about people or texting people during work and adding to the negative environment of the office. You're not getting in fights you shouldn't be getting into. You're not saying negative stuff about callers when you hang up. I mean, there's a lot of ways people burn their energy inefficiently at work by thinking about things and doing things that have nothing to do with the work. So if you save that, if you only do 15 gallons at work, then I would encourage you to bring at least 10 home for your family, your friends, and community so you have enough water in the bucket to be patient, to be curious instead of judgmental, to be helpful around the house, to save up enough water to say something kind to the person that you love the most in the world. And then save at least 5 gallons for yourself, where you take a 20-minute hot bath with candles and you just sit there and chill. You read a chapter or so in a book. You watch a funny TV show that you enjoy. You go for a 15-minute walk after dinner, just by yourself, just to be quiet. And if you can practice that and be intentional about not burning a bunch of negative energy, you will find that your bucket stays fuller. And when your bucket's fuller, you have a capacity for more compassion for people. You have a capacity for more patience, more kindness, more forgiveness, more curiosity. But when we have no water in our bucket or only a few gallons left, it's really hard to show up in the way in the world that's healthy and good, that's showing good character, and that really highlights what you're really about as a passionate first responder.
Well, I definitely know some people who are very dehydrated and don't have anything in their bucket, me included. So I think that is a really good way to visualize it. And that way you can bring it with you to work or to school or whatever it is that you're doing that day. You know, I'm going to carry around a gallon and say, okay, how much of this am I not being intentional with? And you can see the consequences from that. I think it's awesome.
Yeah. And I tell people, you know, buy a little bucket or buy a big bucket and bring it to work with you and put it on your console or wherever you work, your desk. If you work out of your home office, like put something in front of your face that reminds you about how effectively are you using your energy. Some people like to just like buy one of those 1 gallon jugs of water. And then every time they are thinking negative thoughts or they get into gossip, they have to go to the sink and dump some out. And, oh, wow. And just think about that. Like, what if in the center, and we're talking about dispatch at the moment as an example, what if in the center everybody had a gallon jug on their console? And anytime they were burning energy inefficiently, they had to lose some of that water. It would really be this great visual reminder of you are making a choice to eliminate your reserve. to eliminate your water, which is your energy. The other good thing people could do, if you want to go with that analogy, is if everybody had gallons on their consoles, if I came over and helped you with a call, I could pour some water into your jug. Or if I said a kind word to you or offer to stay a little later so you could go home early and be with your kids, I could pour some water in your jug. And that would be a positive visual reminder of, look how we can help fill each other's buckets up.
Well, that's amazing. I never thought of it that way.
So the reminders can be used both ways, right? You can empty things out when you're not making good choices, that's sort of that visual reminder, hey, quit giving your energy away. But then when you give to other people, you can fill up their bucket. And then you're using, you're being intentional about using your bucket in a good way. Which, of course, when we give to others, when we're kind and compassionate intentionally, not out of resentment or guilt or whatever, then what you can do, I could pour some water in your gallon, but then I get to go to the faucet and fill myself up because I feel good, if that makes sense.
It would also be interesting, too, if you had like the big trash bucket like you were talking about in the middle of the room, and collectively you could see as a group how much water was being wasted, because you're not going to drink that water because you're wasting it. You said you're burning it. It's not productive. It's not doing anything. To visually see how much collectively we are wasting our energy would be huge.
Yes.
I was going to talk about this a little bit earlier, but I got so excited about the bucket analogy that I just kind of skipped this question. But what do our identities have to do with how we help people or don't help people?
I think part of the issue, and it gets part of the cultural thing we were talking about earlier, is that y'all do have the capes. I mean, whether you see it or not, y'all are the superheroes. So superheroes don't need help. We're the ones that help everyone else. And we just have to suck it up. We have to deal with it. We have to deal with the trauma. We have to see bad things. That's just what life is. We just have to deal with it. And I think that identity is a main reason that people put themselves last, because you're passionate, you're in it to serve, you see yourself with this superhero identity, which I will tell you, you are, because if I need help, I know I can call 911 and people are going to come save me. I know it. So you are the superheroes. But and this is a problem also when you look at the cartoons, right, where they have all the Batman, Superman, Supergirl, all that. You never see those cartoon people take care of themselves either. They're not doing it either. And that's where we get this. We don't see often people we look up to in the profession doing the energy management, doing the self-care. And like you said, it's this badge of honor to be this 30-year veteran who's crusty and has a bad attitude, which it's like, okay, why is that the badge of honor? But you think about those people with all their wisdom and experience, probably never had a role model for self-care. So they're just doing their programming. So I think we have to impart, just for survival and your own mental health, realize that in order to keep flying with the cape, you have to refuel. I mean, even airplanes that want to keep flying have to refuel or they will fall out of the sky. You have to refuel. And I will tell you, until that becomes a priority and really a part of your identity, you'll always put yourself last. You'll always be operating on a low amount of water. And your physical health will suffer for that. Your mental health will suffer for that. It really is about, I think, making an intentional decision to put yourself first, which I know for a lot of people sounds selfish. But it's really about when you get up in the morning and you say, I have 30 gallons today, that you start with, okay, what am I doing for myself today? What's my 5 gallons for me? And of course, that could be a walk at night, reading a book, massage, whatever. But it's also a commitment to yourself about, you know what, I am not going to go to work and get in everybody's business today, because today is a 30-gallon day. It is not a 100-gallon day. So I am not going to go to work and get in the gossip today. And that's something I'm going to intentionally do for myself. And then you make that a priority. But I think it's a big challenge with anybody in a service field to put themselves first, to think of themselves first. We've all been on the receiving end of someone with an empty bucket, and it never feels good. They're angry, they're judgmental, they're harsh, they're a bully, they're impatient, they don't forgive. I mean, fill in the blank. We've all been on the receiving end of that. It never feels good. So to not end up that person, you have to find some kind of way to put yourself first.
Don't be a buckethead.
Yeah, that's the challenge, though. I mean, you know, because it does come down to how you identify.
So for any friends and family who are listening to us talk about this and say, you know what, I think this is my so-and-so, mm-hmm. this is my husband, this is my girlfriend, what can someone who is not experiencing compassion fatigue do for someone who may be in the throes of it?
So the first thing I will say is manage your own bucket. Because we cannot support those people we love in our life if our bucket is empty, or we're angry with them, we're irritated with them, we're frustrated, you know, we've had it up to here with whatever, fill in the blank. We can't help them if their experience of us is angry, frustrated, impatient, fill in the blank. So if you are in a relationship with any human that is burnt out, crispy, or has compassion fatigue, number one, take care of yourself. Do your thing, whatever you need to do to refill your bucket. Then I would work on expressing compassion and love. I don't want to say, you know, go and offer them all these things and all these ideas and whatever, because a lot of times when people are burnt out and stressed out, they don't have a capacity or in the mental space to think about taking care of themselves. They're just in survival mode. So after showing love and kindness, I might ask them, what would you enjoy to do today? What have you missed doing? What would be a real treat for you? Right? And that might be going to the spa. That might be renewing their gym membership. That might be going to a funny movie. That might be you making their favorite home-cooked meal. Or that might be getting a babysitter for a weekend. And not necessarily going anywhere, but maybe having a weekend where they're off. And that might, I realize weekends might be during the week for some people. But that might just be a couple days without the kids. And create a space where you're able to offer them something or encourage them to do something where they can get a little breathing space. You have to also judge your person, whoever this person is that you're thinking of, and see if they're open to learning about the idea of the energy bucket, to considering changing some things and maybe not taking every overtime shift, right? But I would be hesitant to start out with any advice giving. I might just A, do your bucket first, B, show up with love and kindness and understanding, and then C, ask what they need or what might be a treat, and just try to offer them something. And then the last thing would be gauging where they're at, how open they are, and then maybe bringing up some of these concepts to share with them. But I would make that the last resort, because first responders are people who like to fix and take care of everybody else, and they're not always open to feedback about how they need to fix or care for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Especially after talking about the selfish part, they don't want to be selfish. And I like the what would you like to do today thing, mm-hmm. because I think for a lot of people, especially those with families or a lot of competing priorities, they might just want to sit and watch Netflix all day and get a pizza and not move.
Yes.
And though it's not productive, it just may be the thing that they need to refill their bucket, because there's never a time where they can just sit and do nothing.
Yes. And the work is for this other human, whoever that is to not go, oh my gosh, your only day off and you want to lay on the sofa and have Netflix and do pizza and I need to do such and so with the kids. It's like, you know what, honey, if you want to do Netflix and have a pizza, go for it. I'm going to take the kids. We're going to go out for the day. We'll see you tonight. And let that be okay. Because if you berate them and guilt them into coming, you're not going to have a good time and they're not going to have a good time. So sometimes it's just letting people have some space and asking what they need. And you will be able to do that if your bucket's full and you can show some love and compassion and understanding that they're sort of done with words and they just need to lay there and veg. But when you as their partner or wife or husband, if your bucket isn't full, them laying on the sofa all day doing Netflix is going to make you crazy, which will just lead to a fight, which will just lead to more energy coming out of both of y'all's buckets.
Oh, and then there's going to be a hole in the bucket. And
yes.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Miller. I really appreciate everything and all the insight that you have given us. How can listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, so they can go to my website. It's KimberlyMillerConsulting.com. They can also reach out to me on email. My email is Dr. Miller, at, it's going to be very long, KimberlyMillerConsulting.com. They can also, if they want, sign up for my email newsletter. I have that on the bottom center of my homepage. I do offer free webinars throughout the year, and I am hopeful in 2019 to launch a YouTube channel with a ton of videos that'll have concepts and tools and ideas. All that will be free. And I am also hopeful to start writing my books. So if you get on my email newsletter, you will have access to all the free content I put out. And also when I do paid programs, you will be the first to learn about those as well.
Well, and that's awesome. I did not know that you had all that in the works.
Yes, I have a ton in the works. I'm actually going to put together, as a third thing I'm having in the works, is putting together online classes, because it never fails. Every time I go to a conference, or even when a department hosts me for training, not all the employees can come. And people always say, well, can the other employees who missed take this class online? And I don't have any of my classes online right now. So I'm actually going to be working to get at least one of my classes online in 2019. So no matter what shift schedule you're on, no matter what time zone you're on, you could have access to the training. So I have that hopefully launching as well in 2019.
And I'll also post your links for your website and your email address on our webpage, youroxygenmaskfirst.com. And if you would like to hear more from Dr. Miller, because she has so much insight, so much knowledge on so many different things, send us an email, talk to us on Facebook, and let me know, because I would love to bring her back and hear some more from her. So Dr. Miller, do you have any closing thoughts? Anything else that you want to hit on before we end?
Well, two things. One, I would love to come back. So just let me know what you want to talk about. I think it might be helpful in a second session to explore some other tools that people could use to manage stress and compassion fatigue, like specifically getting into that. So that I'll throw that out if y'all want to do that. The second thing, and probably the most important thing, is, as weird as this is going to sound, make yourself a priority. Because you had mentioned earlier in the webcast about, is compassion finite? Or is it infinite? Can we run out? And I will say, if you don't do self-care and you don't manage your energy and your bucket's empty, absolutely you can run out of compassion. Because with zero water, zero energy, you don't have a capacity to care. You are crispy. You are in survival mode. You're just trying to make it through the day. But if you are intentional and you manage your energy and you put the water back in your bucket and you just take a little bit of your energy every day and do something for you. Even if that is, don't get into the gossip, ignore the drama at work. That's self-care too. If you do that on a regular basis, you will find that compassion is infinite and you won't run out. But most of us are not good at energy management. So there are times in our day and there are times throughout our life that we do run out because we're so crispy around the edges.
Well, I'm going to have to try what I've learned today, this week, when I go back to work. And if you guys see me carrying around a gallon jug of water, you know why. So thank you again, Dr. Miller. I really appreciate it. And we will talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast. And you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.